kick ass.
Whoa, that's kick ass.
Make your life better?
This is the Kick-Ass Life Podcast with David Wood.
Well, good morning and welcome to the 600-second Kick-Ass Light Show designed to put a little smile on your face. Do you have a smile on your face? Why are you laughing at me there, young lady? Put a little spring into your step and allow me to give you a little kick right in the bottom. A little push in the rump, or as I like to call it, a kick. In yours. Now, you know and I know, I always start with a few fun facts. So, did you realise this? One out of every three employees who received a promotion use a coffee mug with the company's logo on it. You got to kiss a little bottom there. You got to kiss a little bottom. Do you realise this? About a third of people flush the toilet with their while they're still sitting on it. I always worry about it. Have you ever sat on an airplane and done that?
It's no. like
whoom, you feel like everything's going to disappear down the toilet. Do you realise this? That according to Genesis 1:20-22, the chicken did actually come before the egg. And soldiers from every country salute with their right hand. Here's a nice one. The microwave. Oh no, I would now we will talk German. The microwave oven was invented by mistake, like everything else seems to, when an engineer who was testing a Megatron tube noticed that the chocolate in his pocket was melting. The guy melted himself. You know, anyway, so I want to tell you one last one. Only 14% of Americans say that the skinny dipped with... Oh, you know, I couldn't read it. You have to understand, everybody. We're sitting here. We're using a tiny little phone to do the whole thing. And I'm trying to read off it at the same time. That's why. But it says only 14% of Americans say they've skinny dipped with the opposite sex.
That's sad.
We wouldn't be in that 14%. No. We've done a little skinny dipping ourselves, we have. Well, you know, as you can tell, we've got Jen back. She was off gallivanting, getting her hair done last week. So she just, you know, she just left us.
I had to visit Johnny.
Yeah, she. Anyway, what's it like to be back?
Fantastic. I'm sorry I missed everyone last week. Yeah. I was quite sad.
You're a bad girl.
Bad.
Okay. So last time we did a show, we were sitting on a trampoline. Do you want to describe where you are right now?
We're in our new home, sitting on the only piece of furniture in our house.
That's why it's echoey.
So for echoing, that's why. It's an empty house. We're sitting on the only piece of furniture, which is one couch. But we're overlooking our new spectacular view over Lake Okanagan and the mountains and our new pool.
I think they're getting sick of me because I've been doing this all week. Oh, well, let me tell you how beautiful the view is. Anyway, we should get on. This is Ask Dave. Oh, that's so funny. A-S-S-K. Ask Dave. This is Ask Dave number 7. And thank you, everyone, for keep asking questions. Well, you're up, young lady.
The first question's from Helen Valenzuela.
Oh, Venezuela.
Helen's
Hola, Helen. ¿Hablas español también? Whoop.
Helen asks, why does the mention of making money feel so uncomfortable to me? I'm a retired pensioner with a comfortable monthly pension.
Well, that's a great question. You know, when we study personality styles, this is scientific. This isn't just me making this up. But I teach in one of my programs, I teach a little bit about personalities. And there are four primary personalities that are sort of driven by different sort of things. Like, for example, one is driven by power. One is driven by intimacy. One is driven by fun. That would be the one that I'm my personality style. And they call it, if you want to actually check this out, you can go online to thecolorcode.com, and you can do a free online survey.
Analysis.
Thank you so much. My brain's a little foggy this morning. We were out at the symphony last night. Then the last one is driven more by peace. And, you know, the one thing I'd say, though, Helen, is that the whole thing about comfortable I think a lot of people who want to lead a kick-ass life, you know, want to trade in comfortable for something a little bit, and it doesn't matter about age, remember. It's nothing to do with age. So, you know, if you've listened to my show with Jimmy Smith, which is one of my early shows, he started his last business at 74. He's now 85, and he's made about $30 million. He was a butcher his whole life. So what's that?
Jimmy the Butcher.
Jimmy the Butcher. He's a good friend. Yeah. My brain's not working this morning. You realize that?
So,
Helen, you know, there's a couple of things, though. You know, is comfortable something you really want? Or would you love to go out? Now, not that you need to have any more money, but there's, you know, a lot of people, even on the show, if I ever promote something, you know, you'll find, I get texts or emails about, you know, oh, it's a, you know, it's this or that. Even though it makes logical sense that if I'm going to run a show and I have a staff, I probably need to pay for it. But some people, you know, when you start talking about it, you know, it bothers them. So you're one of a whole group of people. And there's the other thing is the financial blueprint. You know, you're sort of the way you've been wired and conditioned by your parents and schools and the media and, you know, everything. You know, some people are wired to be broke and to be comfortable. So your wiring is about being comfortable. And I imagine if we look throughout your whole life, we'll probably see a pattern of comfort where you don't take a lot of risk. You don't sort of step out very often. And you may find yourself saying things like, oh, you know what? Maybe not now, maybe another time. You'll put things off often, right? So comfort is can be a real something that really takes away from extraordinary. So I urge you, and not that you have to spend any money, but go and do something that you've been putting off for a lot of years. Go and try something. And
skinny dip.
Hey, Helen, skinny dip with the opposite sex or the whole team. All right, I hope that answers that one, Helen.
All right, our next question's from Chris Carrier. Curious what role religion, faith, or your experience with either plays into your kick-ass life, if any.
Oh, that's a great one. Now we get into, what's those famous things you shouldn't talk about? Politics, religion, and sex, is that right? No, everyone talks about sex. You know, I think that this is a great question, Chris, and I'm always excited. And you have to understand, I don't sit down and think about these before I answer them. I always want to answer them in a truly authentic way in the moment. So, you know, we haven't sat down and I haven't jotted down thoughts. This is truly what I think, though. I'm very fortunate to work with people of all faiths, and it's quite extraordinary that I'll have sometimes five or six faiths represented in the same training. And Jen, you've seen that. Mm-hmm. And people of, you know, people who are really faith-based, in other words, they come from a form of religion that is that has maybe a heavier doctrine, and doctrine can be taken negative. I don't mean it that way, but you know, some religions are very, very you know, fixed in their approach, let's say. And for some reason, I'm able to sort of teach people of all religions, even if they are extremely, extremely religious, you know, where they've sort of grown up in a world where they don't appreciate, you know, bad language of any kind, or they don't appreciate certain things being said. When they start training with me, they seem to sort of be able to step in that world and really open up their hearts. And I think it's because what I do is from all the years of traveling around the world, I feel that I've really stepped into many people's faiths, and I step in with great reverence and great respect for all faith, and I step into somebody who has no faith and with the same respect. I understand that everyone's on a journey, and that everyone, depending on the, you know, where they've grown up, how they've grown up, what their influences were, what's happened to them through their life, they're going to have a choice of some kind. But I think faith plays an important role in everyone's life. But then I think if I'm talking to anyone of faith who has strong faith, and they, you know, part of the role for many churches is to actually bring your word to other people, to actually introduce other people to your faith. And there's many religions that have that. Some will go and actually knock on your door. Some will stand on street corners and it's a beautiful thing. They're just trying to say, hey, there's another way, right? But here's what I find, is I try and teach people, friends of mine, that have a very, very strong religious views and beliefs and really want to, you know, introduce more people, I try and encourage them to open up their language, because sometimes we can talk one language and we can get stuck in a doctrine. And what it does, everyone in that same language and everyone in that same doctrine, they all understand, but everyone who's outside of that can't hear them. And I'm saying, like, I always think of Jesus. I mean, I spent a year in Israel, and you know, when you walk the Stations of the Cross in Jerusalem, or you go to the Church of the Nativity or the Church of the Ascension, all these places that, you know, you've read about in the Bible, and I've spent a lot of time there. You know, I think of this guy and I think, wow, what a guy, you know. And I think of a modern day sort of Messiah, people who you know, they're not Jesus, but they live like him. They follow his kind of teachings, and they really impact the world, like Gandhi, Mahatma Gandhi, or Martin Luther King. But, you know, a lot of these people, like Jesus, they walk into the darkest of places. They go to the places that are scariest. You know, you read it in the Bible all the time about, you know, going into brothels and going into, you know, into places of dens of iniquity, right? And that's what I think true faith is about, is the ability to carry our faith in our heart, but also be open to all other people, even if they don't speak our language, and to learn to speak a language that everyone else can hear. And that's what I feel I practice, is like, whether I'm, you know, if I'm in a Catholic church, or I'm in a Jewish synagogue, or if I'm in a Muslim a mosque, the ability to step in there and really hear what's going on and still carry my own beliefs in my heart, which, again, if we're living a kick-ass life and we're living and practicing around immediate forgiveness, if we're practicing, you know, the courage of going first, if we're practicing the courage of listening, of being interested and not interesting, you know, all these things, which I think are really beautifully the things that most faiths talk about. They talk about these things as being important. But I do urge then, Chris, how it sort of rolls out for me is that I encompass all faiths. I believe that everyone is saying the same thing. They just have a different way of interpreting it and a different way of expressing it. And I think that once we all step into this kind of notion that expression doesn't change the fact, but it has caused a lot of problems for people. A lot of problems because one person speaks one way and one person speaks another. You know, that can separate them. And I think that, you know, people who lead a kick-ass life, they can hear someone speaking a different way and they can really hear and step into it and be a part of it so that faith can spread throughout the world. And I think we can bring peace and beauty to the world. And I think it desperately needs it too. That was a long one, wasn't it?
That was fantastic.
So much for the 600-second show.
I've only got two more questions. Leading into that immediate forgiveness idea, Melanie Butes has a question. She says, I think that instant forgiveness or immediate forgiveness is a wonderful idea. However, in real life, when one has hurt another, how in the world can one get in the mindset of instantly forgiving?
Well, you know, you're already probably in the mindset because you're thinking about it. Some people don't think it's a possibility. I mean, no one taught me when I was young. I was angry for many, many years. There was people, I hated my own mother, you know. I mean, I remember vocalizing that and not speaking to her for years, you know. And how does that work for you? You know, those of you hanging on to stuff and stuff that's happened. You know, I love that saying. I've used it a lot on the show. Which is, you know, when you hold on to anger, it's like drinking poison and expecting somebody else to die. And what I learned through a long process, you know, when I started to really practice forgiveness, my whole world changed. And for someone who spent a lot of years who I wasn't forgiving, I was incredibly judgmental. I was, you know, I was not a very honest person. I didn't have great values, you know. I mean, there was all these, I was sort of living in a sort of one foot in the dark dark world and one foot in the light. You know, certainly I was trapped between the two worlds. I wasn't either or. And I, you know, I still have my moments, but the thing is that what's the alternative of not forgiving? And why do people, in fact, you know, this happened to me the other day. I brought a lady is coming over to clean my house, and because, we've just moved, right? I'm meeting her for the first time and we're chatting and she's asking me about who the new kitchen designer is. And I tell her, she's, oh, and I can see, I said, what's going on? She said, well, you know, we were great friends for 10 years and now we're not speaking. I said, oh, really? And I know both women slightly, right? I'm working with a kitchen designer. I know this woman. So I sit and I just listen to her. I said, well, tell me the story. What's going on for you, right? And so she tells me the story. And I said, well, what do you want? Do you want her back in your life? She said, yeah, it was great. We used to, you know, we were marathon runners together, you know, so we'd run a lot together. We had a lot of great times, you know. And I said, well, why didn't you just forgive her and just step in? Why didn't you send her an email and you can get this done? You know, she said, well, why would I have to go first? Well, I said, well, if you don't go first, who's going to go first? You know, someone has to go first. And but what I found is this, you know, and by the way, you know, what I said to her is I said, well, you know what I'll do? I'll make sure that, because she said very kind things about this kitchen designer. And I said, you know, I'm not going to tell her that I've spoken to you. I'm just going to mention that this lady had said that you are a great kitchen designer, and I'll leave it there. So at least the door can be open. I said, but I think it's up to you to send an email or something and just tell the truth. Hey, listen, I miss having you in my life. Love to put this behind us, you know. And, you know, and if she wants to say the whole forgiveness thing, I think that's hard to hear sometimes. I forgive you. Some people don't want to hear it that way. You just forgive in your heart. It's a quiet thing, all right? I forgive you is something you act out by how you show up. I forgive you is how you speak to someone. It's, you know, sending those little text messages or, you know, it's not a question of saying, well, now I forgive you. You know, it's almost like that sounds condescending. But so I think that forgiveness, it plays a critical role in a kick-ass life. It plays a critical role in success. It plays a critical role in happiness and joy. But here's the thing. Forgiving yourself for something you've done to someone else, that is something that, you know, you talk about immediate forgiveness. There, it's harder. If you've hurt someone, you can't immediately forgive yourself and just step into the next thing and don't care, right? You have to clean it up a little bit. You have to go over. And what I do when I make mistakes, and I make a lot, because I'm always living life on the edge, right? Which means I'm going to do things wrong. I'm going to piss people off. I'm going to upset people, right? And is I will go up and I will just say, hey, can I talk to you? And I'll ask them to sit down or I'll phone them or whatever. I say, look, I just want to truly apologize. And I'll just tell the truth. Tell the truth all the time with compassion. I didn't mean to hurt you. I just want to say I'm so sorry for what happened. And I, you know, if I could rewind the clock, I would choose not to make that, you know, choose not to have that happen again. And I hope you can find a way to forgive me. And I truly, if there's anything I can do to make it up, because the thing is, sometimes you have to make it up. How do you have to make it up if you've hurt someone, you know? So really telling the truth. But what a lot of people do when they hurt someone is they pull back and then they'll make up a new story. And I even heard it in this woman the other day. It's easy to make up a third story, which then keeps two people separated, right? And so instead of stepping in and saying, well, you know, I take 100% responsibility for my part in this. That's what I do. It's like I take 100% responsibility for my part in this, because sometimes it's two parts. But if I've really, really hurt someone, I just want them to know. Now, whether they forgive me or not is immaterial. I can still go ahead and forgive myself and say, hey, you know what? I did the best I could with what I had. I've did my best to clean it up, and you know, I'm going to step on in my life, and I'm going to use this experience so I don't do it again. I'm going to forgive myself so I don't carry this dark energy with me, which is going to stop me from moving forward. All right, does that help?
Yeah.
Wow, I'm doing long answers. They're big questions, though, right?
We have one last question. This one's from Sharon. Sharon says, "I found you after my divorce a little over a year ago. I'd listen to the podcasts at work, exercising, driving home, and they got me through a very difficult time. I haven't stopped listening. However, I need your help. After being in another relationship, my heart is broken. Unfortunately, we have to work together. I have a long history of depression, so I'm constantly reading self-help books, listening to podcasts, uplifting music, anything to try stay positive. Please help me out of this funk. I so want to lead a kick-ass life. However, I feel like I'm just trying to climb out of a deep hole. Please take my plea into consideration. I want to set a good example for my beautiful children. I want to be happy. Thank you."
Well, you know, I'm not a clinician, right? So I do understand, though. I've had experiences with people in my life who've suffered with depression, and I do understand that it's a chemical imbalance and that sometimes you just need help, right? And sometimes it's a chemical help. And, you know, it's easy for me to say, oh, you know what, just positively think your way out of it. So if we say that there's a clinical depression that needs to be looked at and you need to figure out help, if we can put that one aside for a second, if that's you, then, you know, you may have already gone down that road. You may have already spoken to someone. And it's just a chemical imbalance in the brain. And you know, when you take a certain drug, you know, apparently it balances that out. And I've watched people become happier and because that chemical is missing, right? But if we take that aside and we say that, you know, people who live in a funk, people who kind of suffer with a sort of a, more of a dark energy a lot, or they start focusing on what's wrong with their life as opposed to what's right with their life, if we can move to that area, because I think there's a lot of people who don't suffer with depression, but they're not very happy. So if I can separate the two. And the thing is this, you know, if I can address three parts of the question, one is, guess what? You're going to get hurt every time you fall in love. But, you know, I always say, don't go into your next one to get hurt. Go in to get devastated. Go in to get devastated. That way you're going to lay it all on the line. You're going to jump in with both feet. Because what's the point of going into one relationship, getting hurt, and then sort of reserving a part of your heart and protecting yourself, and then trying another relationship, and then you've been hurt again, so you hide another part of your heart. So in the end, no one is fully in love. No one's jumping in with both feet because they're so afraid of getting hurt. Guess what? It's like death. You know, we were at a funeral last week of your friend, and we should dedicate the show to him. What's it? Why don't you say it?
Alfred Singbeil.
All right, this show dedicated to Alfred. He passed away last week. You're laying there. Guess what? We're all going to die, and you guys are going to get over it. Some of you are living like it's never going to happen. I mean, I always live like I'm going to die right now. I mean, what do I say when I leave the house almost every day?
Kiss me goodbye in case I die in a fiery crash.
You know, I just, and that's what I say. Do I say to my kids? It's like, because the possibility is it's going to happen, you know, and we have to live like life like we are dying. So, but to love and to somehow think that it's not going to hurt at the end. Yeah, hurt. Choose how long you want to mourn for, and then get over it, and then open your heart up fully for your next encounter of love, and bring the experiences with you so you can jump in with both feet. You know, I was really proud last year. So Jen is sitting next to me, my current girlfriend, fiance, and my ex-wife, Pam, spent a day shopping for dresses to go to my ex-girlfriend's wedding with me, who I lived with for 5 years. And to me, I think you can have great relationships after love. And the fact you're working together, what a blessing, because now you can work on it. But somebody has to go first, right? So if you're devastated and you're showing up there and every time you see him or you've got this big cloud on you, how about falling in love with the idea that how lucky am I to have experienced love? I mean, there are many people who have never found someone to love and no one haven't had their heart broken. Imagine that. Imagine living a life where your heart was never tested. And it's just a test, you know, and keep jumping in with both feet. So that's one part of it. So I'd say, guess what? You know, I do believe there's friendship after love, but sometimes there's some anger that has to be sorted out. You know, somebody has to go first. Somebody has to be more enlightened. And if someone's being a complete dick, by the way, that may not happen for many years, but you still can't jump into the pit with them. You can't just because someone's being a complete doorknob that you have to be one too, right? Now you've got two idiots trying to communicate, but you have kids, right? So here's the other point. You know, you're talking about being sort of this yo-yo of emotion for your kids. So you're, you know, depression and then, you know, you're devastated by this guy and blah, 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 right? So I think that the idea with children, there's a deep responsibility that we all have. And so my responsibility for my kids is to show them that I can be in love, I can end a loving relationship, I can be true to my word, I can be kind, I can be generous, I can keep the, you know, I can just really, really work hard at that. And I see it with my eldest son. He's only 15, and how many relationships has he been through in the last year? Three?
Two or three.
And one where he was totally in love, his first love, you know, and I watched him rebound. It's crazy, isn't it, how he rebounds.
Really,
just the rebounds, and I think it's because of the example that he may have seen with me and his mom, right? And that we work on our friendship. We were out at the symphony together last night. So there's Pam and there's Jan sitting next to her and there's myself, right? So that's the other part of the question about with children. I think we have a deep responsibility and use it as a reason. Because, you know, but so how do we get out of the funk? How do you lead a kick-ass life? Well, you already say you're already halfway there. Awareness is the first step. However, you know, you got to get out of this story, girl. You got to get out of this story because it's a perpetual story. I mean, what, imagine if you didn't say those words. Oh, it's like, I feel like I'm in a deep hole or I'm always climbing out of it. I know. And you stop saying, well, I suffer with depression. Again, unless it's chemical, and I get that. If it's chemical, deal with it, but deal with it medically or whatever you need to do. All right. And then still don't focus on it because whatever, say that this is a great saying. It's like what I focus on expands. If you focus on the crappy stuff on your life, it's just going to seem like all there is crap, right? If you focus on the beauty, if you really want to change how you feel, go out and help someone. Go out and volunteer at the dog shelter. Go out and volunteer at I sometimes dress up as Santa Claus and go to the hospital and, you know, at Christmas, stuff like that. Go and do something that makes other people's day. And you're going to find yourself consumed by giving and not focusing on your own problems. And then compare down. Look at the world right now. Look at everything that's going on in the world. You think of women in some countries that are wearing burqas or being mutilated, children who are gorillas and guns thrust in their hand where they have to kill at 9 years of age. We look at regimes where there's zero freedom. We look at poverty and hunger and all the things going on in the world. And look at our Western world life that we have, the luxuries we have and how grateful we are. So I'd start with gratitude. Every day you get up, I would consume, every time your brain starts going into this downward spiral, and you pull out, remember, you're going to pull out your own ladder, you're going to put it down the side of that big pit, and you're going to decide to climb in it. Think of it that way. You're going to decide to climb down into that pit if you want. But the moment you start feeling a little bit blue, a little bit darker, right? Imagine you started helping someone. Imagine you interrupted the pattern. Imagine you sat down and you wrote down 500 things you're grateful for. The fact that you get to tuck your kids into bed at night, the fact you can smell the little cheeks on your kids, the fact that you can go and play outside, the fact that you enjoy freedom. You can go on hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of the things and then step out. So when the story comes, change it. Stop believing that story. Make up a new freaking story. You know what? That's the truth. We're all story maker upperers. Is that a word?
It is now.
We're all going to make up a story, right? Why don't you make up one that works for you instead of the one that doesn't? Because in the end, it's all bullshit. It's all a lie. We're just making it up. You know, we're either going to make up a story that works for us, or we're going to make up one that doesn't. But it doesn't matter. It's not true. It's just our truth. All right. So what about redefining your own truth? Use your children as a great motivation to do that. But stop climbing in the pit. And next time you do, think about it. Oh, I just went and got my ladder and I put it right down in the pit and I decided to get on those rungs and I decided to climb all the way down and sit in there and go into, oh, poor me type of thing, right? So listen, the three things, don't blame, don't justify, don't complain. For the next 90 days, try it. No blaming, no justifying, no complaining. But what I love about what you've done is you've asked for help. And what I love about it is that you want to change. And that's the first step. So I believe this, and hopefully you're going to hear what I'm saying. And remember, I don't think I'm right. Don't you think I'm right, right? What do you think on this?
I was going to make a suggestion.
Go for it.
Sharon, I've just recently discovered positive psychology in the study of happiness. And something I'm really, really interested in now is the idea that you can actually practice happiness. And I know that you've been doing a lot of things that... like listening to the podcast and listening to uplifting music. Some of those things are happiness practices. So I'd invite you to go online and look up Practicing Happiness. You can maybe even come and check out my Facebook page, Happitude by Zen Jen. I'm sharing a lot of the practices that I'm finding that are...
Say it again so she can get it.
Happitude, as in practicing a happy attitude. I'm sharing some of the practices that I'm discovering and that I'm trying, because I realize now, like just like an athlete practices to become an Olympian, we can actually practice to become happier. And I'm trying to share this practice because it became so interesting to me that we can actually do things to change our minds chemically. We can change our physiology just by practicing different things. So for me, maybe it's exercise. Maybe it's even just forcing myself to smile, because when I smile, I actually release chemicals into my brain that actually make me feel better. Meditation, visualizations. Dave spoke a lot about practicing gratitude. Those are all things that we can do to actually change ourselves to become happy from the inside out.
And the thing is, you've done that, Jen. I mean, you weren't the happiest person. You were almost an Olympian. You were, what, fourth alternate in the Olympics for gymnastics. So when I met you, you weren't the happiest chipper on the block, right?
Nope.
But because you were like, and you'd come out of a crappy relationship, and you were kind of sounding a little bit like you were stuck in your pity party a little bit.
Absolutely,
right?
I was.
But
yes.
I watch you now, and I'd say that everyone who knows you is that you're happy a lot. I mean, you seem and you exude happiness all the time. So this is something you have gone from being
you know, into that sort of darker story, into you know, having a woe is me kind of feeling about life, mm-hmm. and feeling like a victim of life, mm-hmm. and that circumstances played out in your life, right? To someone who seems like you're in complete control of it. And that, I mean, you have your moments, but very few.
I had a moment yesterday.
Yeah, you were pretty crappy yesterday.
Oh, I had a moment yesterday, and I actually felt myself falling into that old
pit.
Habit.
You got the ladder out.
Yeah, I was in my pit and feeling myself spiral into my old habit of pity party. And actually, you spoke today about drinking poison, right? That's exactly what I was imagining, noticing and becoming aware of how I was feeling because of the thoughts that I was creating, the story that I was creating in my head, and recognizing that I didn't like how I felt in that moment. So if I could change my thought or change my activity or go do something that I know makes me happy, I could hopefully get rid of that poison that I was feeling circulating through my veins.
And it was
a practice.
Yeah, I remember making a little fun of your face when you go in there. Your face changed. I was doing this little face. But the truth is, I didn't jump in there with you, right? I mean,
no.
It was easy too. I mean, we were in there together for a minute or two, and then I jumped out. I realized, don't want to be here. And but you know, this idea of changing physiology, if you want to change your state, the first thing you can change, the easiest thing to change, is your physiology. Mm. So when Jen talked about smiling or going for a run or getting outside, if you change your physiology, you can change your state. So if you're feeling crappy and you're laying on the couch, guess what? That ain't going to work for you.
That's right.
You got to get off the couch. You got to go do something. Change your physiology, change your state. And also Pema Chodron, she talks about the hovel being that dark pit. And Pema Chodron is a Buddhist, and you studied some of Pema's.
A little bit, yeah. Yeah. She's amazing.
I want to get her on the show, so if anyone's got any contacts to Pema Chodron, that she'd be awesome. She lives in Toronto. But she talks about the hovel, is that we kind of imagine that we build a hovel for ourselves. You know, and for those of you in different countries around the world who don't understand what hovel is, it's like, how do you explain a hovel? It's like
it's the pit.
Yeah,
right?
It's the pit. It's like having a dirty ramshackle little house made of, you know, old corrugated iron and, you know, and just a hovel.
It's your
so somewhere
dark hole, your
it's
cave.
Your dark, your cave, this dark, you know, but it's hovel is something that indicates, you know, that it's kind of fallen down, and it's a cave can be a beautiful thing. So there's lots of practice, and I really love the fact you're asking it. And I know I get harsh, but that's the way I coach. I'm a more of a kick in the ass kind of coach. People say, do you coach? Yeah, I'll coach you. I've got about a minute and a half. And I can't tell you how many people have had a coaching session with me. And after about 6 or 7 minutes, I've just asked them the question, what do you want? Really? You want that? Are you committed to that? And they'll say, yeah. Really? That's what you want? Are you sure? And I'll keep asking, yeah. Okay then. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to turn around. And you know when you cross that carpet line over there, and I'll point to somewhere on the carpet. You decide. When you cross that line, I want you to stop doing what you're doing and start doing something new. It's your choice. And they'll look at me like, well, I've just been in years of therapy and blah, blah. I said, it's up to you. You can choose. You can choose your life. You can choose to stay on this side of the line, and you can choose the story you're in. You can choose to live your life the way you are, or you can cross that line. If you really, really want what you say you want, then I want you to just do it. It's like, just do it. And you know, I've had people who, they've just done it. They've just, because they bought into their story so long, right? That they think it's true, and the story defines them. So now that pity story, that, you know, what would happen if we take away the whole story? But you don't understand, you know, I've had a hard life. Well, guess what? Lots of people have had a hard life, you know, guess what? That's great. My hard life has allowed me to become the person I am. It's not the reason for me not to become great. It's the reason to become the greatest part of yourself. You know, it's because Jen spent so long in a pit that she's so amazing out of it, because she knows what it's like in it. That's why she's earned the right for me to teach happiness. And I bring into my programs to teach happiness because I watch her practice it every day, right? So it's not, so again, I know we're going long, guys, but this is such important stuff. You know, this idea of choice. We can choose everything in our life, everything in our life, everything in our life, everything in our life, right? And if we're going to buy into that BS story, great. How's it working for you? But guess what? The only people you're going to attract into your life are people who like that story. So you're going to have a whole group of pity partiers sitting around, and they're going to be like, you know, they can't see the beauty of the sky. They can't see the space between the leaves. They can't hear the laughter of the children because they're so busy droning on about how poor their life is, when half the world world is not even eating right now. You know, we are so fortunate. If you're listening to this right now, you have some electronic device in your hand. I want you to look at that. And every time you see it, think, gosh, how lucky am I that I can even plug this thing in and listen to someone halfway around the world, right? When there's people who have no chance, no chance at all. So again, I know I've been a little harsh this morning.
Yeah, that's okay.
Is that all right?
You've been kicking some ass.
Kicking some ass. Well, why don't you wrap up the show? You know how to do it.
No. You're
What's that? What do you mean no? Get over here, Mrs. What's that? She's holding the microphone the wrong way around. She's sticking out my nose. All right. Hey, by the way, we're recording this just on our phone, all right? And we're sort of putting this thing together. It's 34 minutes, so it's a long 10-minute show. What we've done is we've taken 3 10-minute shows. I don't even want to stop talking. I'm just enjoying it. But anyway, I will shut up. But listen, guys, you know what? It's life by design. We can design our life. We can have great relationships. You can have great intimacy. You can have great friends. You can have great life. Everything, you know. But it's got to start with being grateful for where we're at. We can't move past where we're at until we start to be grateful for it. And then we've got to keep moving. Andrew, you sent me a great email last night. The guy I dedicated the show to on Thursday. Andrew, it's all about that first step. You may be terrified to take it, but take it. Take the first step and keep moving forward. And it's, even though the fear surrounding you, again, those of you listening to my show on Thursday, you know what this is about. But you know, Andrew and I were just conversing on Facebook. And listen, the first step, you're consumed by fear. Feel the fear, do it anyway. Anyway, guys, I send my love. You want to what?
I'll do the sign off.
You want to do it?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
See you on the other side.
That was kick-ass.